Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the show, Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today on the radio. We are going to be talking about a great topic today, the modern student. And I really am going to emphasize that word, modern student, because it's about how do you get grades that are able to carry you forward. We put so little emphasis, well, most parents do, on the transition from high school into college, when really that's probably an area where we need to put the most emphasis on some kids for their grades. But how do you really do that when, you know, gosh, you know, both parents are working these days, the kids are busier than ever, they're doing all kinds of other stuff, there's a whole lot of peer pressure, way too much going on these days. So today we're going to be talking about upper high school edition of Barbara Diana's new book. It's called Grade Transformer for the Modern Student. And I think it's a great addition to anyone, but do not wait until you're in grade 11 to get this book. You definitely need to get it in grade 9 so you'll have something to start with. And I think because, you know, the more prepared you are and the more you can see that light at the end of the tunnel, the better off you'll be. So Barbara is going to share her story with us, and I think it's great to have her on, especially now at this time of the year. So many people are really having that crash and burn time, you know, when they realize the third of the school year was already over and it's now up to the holidays. So, Barbara, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate you asking.
You know, Barbara, I'll tell you, when I can remember, well, I always like to put my own stuff in. I've got, I can remember going to, you know, high school in, well, gosh, it was the late 60s, early 70s, and no one ever really worried about your grades that much, and if you were going to get into college, kind of be, I don't know why, I'm thinking back on it now as we do this, and I'm saying, I think I had B's and C's, you know, and I got into a really good college. I got into Loyola University in New Orleans. It was a really good school, and I'm thinking, was it hard to get in? I don't know. I didn't have 100 extracurricular activities. SATs and ACTs, I don't know if we did them then, did we?
Yes, you did.
We did, we?
Yes,
you know?
They've gone back to the late 1920s, early 1930s.
And then I think back on my own kids when they were going to college, you know, and this was in the 90s, and I looked at it and I said, gosh, you got to have all this other stuff. And then my last child went to college in after 2000, and it was like the list grows even longer. Man, you know, it's harder and harder to get into college these days because they think there's so many limited spaces for these kids to want to get in. It's getting to be, I don't know. I don't know what the story is. What are you thinking?
Well, it absolutely is harder because back in the early 60s, historically, there were less and less people going to colleges, and certainly not as many women going to colleges as there are today. So if you just take the female populace out of the group and just have the male populace, it's certainly a lot, you know, more spaces available for students. Now with the growing number of women going to college, and some years more women go to college than men, you have so many more students applying, and then you have students from foreign countries applying for spaces in our schools, in our colleges here as well, and that wasn't as prevalent back in those years.
And I also remember, too, the concept that only rich people got to go to college. It was a long time ago, you know, or people who could figure out a way to get it paid for, because a lot of people, that was kind of the first wave of in the, I guess, I think it was the early 70s, you know, is that those, not everybody went. It really wasn't, when I graduated high school, the majority of the people going to college, you know. And then now with my daughter graduating after, you know, the year 2000, everybody went except maybe 1%. Big
right.
difference.
It is a huge difference, and I think also the jobs are more sophisticated because of the growing number of, you know, the technology world, you know, the mm-hmm. jobs in the technology world, and even jobs that maybe didn't require a college degree back in the 1960s because of technology expanding so much and the types of skills now needed for those types of jobs. You know, college degree becomes more and more important than it was perhaps back in the 60s and the early 70s.
Well, and you know, as you've said right in the beginning of your book, you know, parents and teenagers often want to handle academic struggles in private. You know, and I think about that all the time. You know, there's a whole lot of shame around academics. You know, peer pressure, everybody likes to say and tout what they're doing and if it's a positive thing. But when they're struggling in school, you know, they'll sometimes say, you know, I have brand new dresses every single day, and they'll have a whole lot of stuff on social media, but their grades will be in the toilet, you know, just
right.
the opposite, to overcompensate. So I'm sure it's a real difficult thing for a lot of people these days to say, what do I do, because I'm not going to ask for help. I don't want anybody to know my kids aren't doing well.
Right, and the kids themselves feel that way. What I've noticed, what I found is a trend in my teaching is when I would first start working with a high school level student, they would say to me, do you know how hard it is for me to have to admit I'm struggling in whatever class or whatever okay. classes that they were struggling in, or they may have had a diagnosed learning disability that just came up, or could have been one they've been working with for many, many years to get through. But they would say to me, it is so hard for me to have to admit to myself, to my parents especially, and certainly to my peers, that I'm not performing academically at the level they, you know, that everybody expects me to. And that can be very devastating, and it's extremely devastating on their academic self-esteem.
Well, what made you start getting involved with this path in your life, especially with this book, too?
Well, I was diagnosed when I was in second grade for the very first time through the University of Minnesota's testing and diagnosing a medical clinic with dyslexia. I knew I was smart, but I wasn't performing to the level my peers were, and learning seemed to be so much more difficult for me, and I was reversing my letters and numbers, and, you know, the words were moving around within the page, and sometimes, you know, letters and numbers were transposed. And what I found was I really wanted to be educated at the college level, and I also wanted to be academically, you know, on track with my peers. I wasn't happy with the lower grades and being the one that mm-hmm. had the low test scores. And I come from a whole long line of educators on my mother's side of the family, and my grandmother was a middle school English teacher for around 30-some years. And so, and I even have some college professors and doctors in my lineage on my mother's side. So education was highly important to me. So I just put myself on my own track to be educated. When I was diagnosed, there wasn't much at that time period to do for a student with dyslexia. I was taught my sight words and sent on my way.
Right.
And at that time, you know, learning is so far, you know, that sight words aren't important, they are, but the learning has so much more than just sight words. So I put myself on reading programs. I put myself on summer reading programs. My grandmother would send me suggestions. She bought me a junior dictionary and asked me to look up the words I didn't know and, you know, put the phonetic spelling and write, have a running reading total list for myself, a running word list to work on, and then, or else I'd make flashcards with them. And so I really worked hard at overcoming my learning issues. And I was diagnosed at two other times later in my academic journey from my pre-K through 12th grade years with dyslexia through the University of Minnesota. And learning was frustrating. And when you know that you want to do well and your brain isn't always doing what you want it to do, it can be very frustrating. And so I would find I'd go along, you know, fine within classes, and then I'd hit glitches again. And it would all, where I thought I was doing so much better and I was over it, then it would start falling apart again. And maybe my organizational skills at that time needed to be beefed up along with my learning strategies, and I did a lot of trial and error through my years to be educated. And so finally, by the time I hit my junior year, I never struggled again academically and actually had almost straight A's graduating from high school my senior year. And so then I did go on to college, and I saw students like myself, because I went to a very large public school with over 2,000 students, and my graduating class had over almost 650 students. And within that, of course, there were other kids like myself or students who struggled in school, had dyslexia or ADD or some other learning difference, or just were struggling. And I was the only one that went to college. And at that time, that really broke my heart, because I knew these people were smart, because I was in, you know, I knew them and went, not all of them, but and had some of these people in my classes. And I felt that if I could overcome my learning difference and go to college and be educated at the university level, that I owed it back to help others that were like myself struggling in school and use my techniques that through trial and error I found worked for myself and see how I could help others to overcome their learning issues.
Well, you know, it's really important too to note that a lot of people with dyslexia that goes untreated or got undiagnosed or even aware of it, you know, and I think right now is a really super critical time. If you think about all of the spell checks and the autocorrects, so every time they're sitting down writing something and the computer fixes it, they're thinking that the way that it's supposed to be written is the way they're writing it, and then it's that's cemented in their brain. So then when they go and they have to read a standardized test, they're not going to recognize a word because it isn't auto-corrected back to the word that they recognize as that. And I think that is probably the next biggest crisis, is auto-correct and spell check for people who are really having these concerns. You know, because you wouldn't think to look back on something that you just wrote. You would figure it was there, but the computer corrected it for you. You didn't. So
right.
You
Absolutely.
Really have no engagement in it. You're just a passive person. It's passive, you know.
What I've taught my students with that, because I see that as a definite, you know, area that could be, you know, difficult
Red
for
flag.
Students. Because, you know, even with my new cell phone, mm-hmm. you know, when I'm texting, as soon as it's, so as part of the word, the whole word, you know, you've got choices. You can just press the button for the entire word to come up.
Right.
And so what I teach my students is those, you know, the spell checks and all the autocorrects are great, but you really need to still pay attention to those words. Even if you're using autocorrect, go back and look at the spelling of that word. Say it to yourself.
Right.
And if you don't know how to spell, if you know you don't know how to spell it, put it down on a running reading list, you know, for yourself of
right.
words that you need to continue working on. And, you know, learn those affixes, because so many words, especially the larger multisyllable words, are made up of a base, smaller base word with affixes, prefixes and suffixes
right.
attached to them. And so I always teach them, don't just rely on that spell check, because when you're in a testing situation or you have to write and you don't have those, you know, nice spell checks available, you've got to still be able to perform.
Right, because a lot of times, you know, when I've taken a zillion of those tests and I have 15 years of college, so I can honestly attest to this, you know, I'll skim a question, you know. I'll skim right through it, and if there's a word in there, I noticed this in medical school. All you need to do is change one letter, and it changes the whole meaning
the whole
of
world.
The entire thing. And I wouldn't even sometimes notice that one unless I really had to slow down and not
right.
skim in certain situations. And then also, too, the idea when you're taking those tests is that, you know, you really can't be skipping questions either, because questions build on each other. You know that the old way of testing, they'll put a big paragraph up there and they'll ask you six questions under it. And if you don't know the one or two and you say, I'll go to the third, maybe the fourth, and then I'll answer the sixth, you could have every single one of those wrong if you hadn't
Absolutely.
Built on the first one.
Absolutely, and that's where I teach my students to use their resources.
Yeah.
That means you really try to, you know, try to take the test in order of the questions. And if you absolutely have to skip one because you really don't know what it is, you know, you're not sure, then put a little notation by it, and then also make sure that you're aware that as you're going to the next questions, if there's something that's related back to that question, that you make a note of it and go back and really analyze both of those questions. And that's been a really great tool for my students to do better with their testing, because so many of them, are, of course, struggling in school, struggle with test-taking skills. And sometimes is those they're skimming through too much, where and I've noticed where that one little word can change the entire question. And they can miss that one word. And so I really teach them to take their finger or their pencil and look at every single word. Slow down. Test taking is not a race. It's not showing that you are the best person in the class if you're finished first.
Right. You know, it's really crazy because my eldest son, he took standardized tests and didn't even take all of the classes. And he got a 99.9 on the standardized test for pharmacy. And then my daughter turns around and takes a standardized test and gets her 99s too. But yet I turn around and take the standardized test and I'm barely even skating over. And I know it's because I skim and stuff like that. And then they say to me, but I don't know. I don't know how to tell you because I just get it. I don't know. I'm just a good test taker, they'll tell you. Even my daughter could work days and nights and days and nights, you know, at the hospital and turn around and take her test. And she says, I don't know. It's just there. So everybody's different. I mean, there's three totally different scenarios, you know.
Absolutely.
And it's just so different. And
it
I
is.
Think some sometimes these standardized tests, they're not always built on understanding. Sometimes they're built on memorization of facts. Sometimes they're understanding. Sometimes they're concepts, new concepts that they put in there, and they want you to learn it instantly and build something from that. So that's deduction, you know. And, gosh, some kids are like, I don't even know what this even means, right?
Absolutely. And what I've taught my students is because so many of them, when they would, you know, start with me for the very first time, that you know, I'd look through their past tests, of course, with them if they were available, and I'd look at their past grades, and they would say, you know, I really studied for this test. I didn't, you know, I really worked at it, but nothing I studied was on the test, or I'm just really not good at taking tests, and I study and study, but I still end up with a D or C or whatever. And I would teach them that sometimes test taking is an art. And I learned this, you know, through my years of school. There were students that I knew that really could put any test in front of them almost and they could pass it because they had an ability to take tests well and to analyze the questions, and they just had that innate ability, and that was their gift and talent. They were great at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I learned to do was go back with my students and say, okay, let's see the types of questions that you're missing. Is there a type of question you're not getting? Is there words that you're skipping over? Let's really look and see what it is that's going on that needs to be corrected and why it is that you're not performing as well if you have studied and put the time into it. And so that's where we would really start with that analyzation and going back and even using some just test-taking workbooks that the kids read a paragraph, even in the high school level kids, there's ones available for them. Or you can even use the SAT practice test booklets to help the kids. And have them go through and read the paragraphs, take the test, and look at what types of questions they're missing. Are they analytical questions? Are they just your simple true and false? Are they, you know, making generalities? Or, you know, what area did they need to go back? Is it deductive reasoning that seems to be an area of weakness? And then we would go back and really work on honing in on those skills and helping the student become better test takers. And even looking at the words of the tests and making sure that they understand all the vocabulary you see in tests.
Yeah.
Are you feeling despair or overwhelmed by your health or everyday life situations? Do you know what questions to ask and how to get help? Don't go it alone. Ask for help. Dr. Jeanette offers compassionate and comprehensive advocate support for health challenges. To download her free report, How to Get the Healthcare You Deserve, go to her website, www.drjeanettewellness.com. Anyone who downloads the information tonight will receive a complimentary 15-minute personal needs analysis consult with Dr. Gallagher for questions and answers. That website again for the free report download and free consult is www.drjeanettewellness.com. Just reach out and ask for help.
And that is a huge difference, you know, where people don't even understand some of the words. They just haven't come across them. You know, this world is a big place, you know, and everybody says, well, my girlfriend in New York knows it, and I live here in Florida. Well, you know, different. I have been around the country enough times with my kids in enough schools and the schools for myself that I can tell you, not everybody is getting the same information. So these tests are generalities put out there, and it's just hoping right. that you're able to get them. That is the biggest thing, especially I can say that even in college in the 70s and the 80s when I went to school, I would be studying or knowing about a certain subject, and the people in the South already knew about that subject, yet I was from the North, and I had never been introduced to that subject. I know that sounds silly, but it is true. You know, it's just different things were different, and what kind of emphasis was put on it when you were in school.
Absolutely, and I found that as well. As I was from the North, and you know, certain you know, math and science and everything else was highly, highly stressed where I came from in English. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved to Texas, they had Texas history, which I knew none of, was highly emphasized right. in our school system. So there was a whole, you know, I found areas I had to go back as a teacher and relearn that weren't as emphasized. But I think, you know, now that we have more of the Common Core coming out, you're going to have some more, have some sort of continuity between the states, which might be, you know, good and bad at the same time.
Oh.
And that's why, you know, students, regardless, like I would teach my students, mm-hmm. you know, let's take a look at, you know, the information that you're learning. Let's go back over this textbook. Let's prepare.
Right.
You know, I would always have them prepare. If they know there's a test, I'd have them write down all their tests and keep up with, you know, whether it was listed online or a calendar or whatever, immediately so they knew. And if they had a test a week and a half from then, they found out there'd be a test, I had them start preparing immediately. That means learning, you know, so much instead of just waiting mm-hmm. until, you know, 2 days before the test or even the night before the test and trying to cram it all in their brains and then try to access it correctly on a test-taking situation. And I found when they would study little by little and keep working and then going back over information that they had already learned the previous night, that was highly effective for them. Instead of waiting to the night before and or 2 nights before and then finding that they were forgetting the information on the test or not accessing it properly or not learning it enough where they could analyze the question and figure out if the question wasn't directly stated like they learned it in their material, that they
right.
could analyze what the question was answering and start using those deductive reasoning skills.
You know, I'm here in the Deep South, and I'll tell you, there's a huge problem with Common Core. Nobody wants it. And sometimes we always find that when people resist things, it's not necessarily that they don't want it because it might be better. Sometimes they don't want it because they know they're going to fail at it, which has totally come up, is that the schools said, well, you know, we didn't pass a standardized test before, and if you think we didn't pass them great before, well, we're doing worse now. So, you know, you're not always getting the truthful answer, what's better or what isn't better. You just have to really do as much possibly as you can and get the
right.
best school system that you possibly can, because really, when it comes right down to it, that school, you can come back to your school reunion 40 and 50 years from now and the school will still be there, probably teaching the same stuff with the same books. It's really up to you to be able to get the stuff out of it, and it is totally
yeah.
the truth.
Absolutely. And I found, you know, as I was going through my own educational journey, and even as I interviewed students that were your A students, and I did this myself when I was going through school, and also when I was teaching, I would find some of the A students and talk to them. What are you doing? You know, what, you know, are you just using just the textbooks and just whatever you get from class, and you're able to ace every test that you put in front of you? Often I would find that they were doing far more work than you would, than they wanted to admit, in order to educate themselves. You had your few that could take any test, but the majority of the populace were really working hard. They were adding supplementary reading material to the material they were learning, and they were really going back and, like, if, for instance, if they were learning the parts of the cell, they were overlearning the information. They were finding other sources that also talked about the cell and the parts that we might use some different language, and they were really working at bringing in some other sources, not just the standard textbook or the handouts in class, so that when they got to the test, they really thoroughly knew that factual information.
I think that really comes along with the decades, because myself going in high school in the 70s, it was just all you had was what they gave you in school. In the library, you know, there were maybe two in your city. And remember the old thing, you can only take out two books at a time. And, you know, and if it was a good book that you needed to study from, it was a reference book and you had to sit in there to be able to do your work, and sometimes they weren't available. Now, that's a hindrance, but that's also the way it was. Bring yourself forward. Now that we've got the internet and everything, you could listen to a cartoon on the cell. You could watch YouTube on the cell. You could, excuse me, you could find rap songs about the cell. You know what I mean? There are so many different ways to be able to get that into your brain that really does help. But here also, too, I think this is important, is that parents always try to help their kids. But if you look at, now let's say, what I learned in the 70s and then my kids were in school in the 90s was such a revolution. The internet wasn't in place yet, but it was still such a revolution that, you know, I couldn't help them that much. But then, oh my gosh, since the 90s, if you think your parents are going to be able to help you with your homework, you're sorely mistaken, you know? You really need to find sources from people that are like yourself or these guidebooks or someone to help you, guide you through this, because your parents are just as fearful to say that they don't understand it and they don't know it.
That can happen. That can happen because, and I was talking to a parent not too long ago about the same subject in a counseling, you know, setting, and like I explained to this parent who was a little bit older, dad had a high school daughter, look at this science book and think back to the text and the complexity that's in this particular science book with physics and all of this, and think back to the textbook you had.
I know.
And the information that just wasn't available compared to today's world, and the amount of differences in the concepts that are required for the student today's world than they was, you know, was that were required back in the 60s and 70s. So there is a huge jump in the amount of content that students need to know because of the changing world. But what I also recommend to students, if their parents, you know, sometimes parents are brought in, you know, our student want to learn, they can learn along with their student. It just depends entirely on the parent and the situation. Or they can get a peer tutor. I found that to be very effective for students who maybe their parents couldn't afford tutoring. If they would find an astute friend in class who was really good at re-explaining concepts, maybe in their language, and both students would actually gain from that experience. Is the student teaching the concept or reteaching it to this other student would find that they had a better memory and do of the information, and it would help solidify their learning concepts, and then the student who was being taught would also learn as well. And so there are many ways that students in today's world, if they start struggling, that they have so many tools and information available to them that wasn't available even back in the 90s.
Yeah. I'll tell you, just before the internet came out, I mean, it was things were out there, but they weren't quite out there as much. But once that internet hit, Lord, I mean, that just opened up an entire world where I think
it
everything
did.
Just went crazy, you know?
It does. And students need to be able to really utilize some of those tools that are available to them to, in today's world, and know that they can get help. So, you know, like I teach my students, okay, say that one explanation about a particular concept, maybe be a gerund in English, and you're just using your textbook and your handouts. Maybe you're not getting it. But that doesn't mean that, you know, I always like to teach them what to do when I'm not there. You know,
right.
What do you say? Because they had to learn how to stand on their own. You know, go to the internet, find, you know, five different explanations. One of them, and you might find some pictures or cartoons, or you might even find some internet interactive game that teaches the same concept. One of those pieces of material somewhere will speak to you. And just because you didn't get it the first time, don't just think, I don't need this concept anyway, I'm just going to forget it and go on. Go
right.
back and make sure you're not giving yourself learning gaps, because
you know,
learning builds upon itself. And that very concept you think you didn't need, you're going to find you might probably will need later. And go back and do that. You know, put a mark by the ones you're not getting, and find other sources, or ask a friend that knows, that has a really good grasp and handle on that information.
You know, I can remember 6.02 times 10 to the negative 23rd. I think that was from ninth grade. Ninth grade physics, but I will tell you, I have definitely used that number all the way through. So if you think it's just a number that's out there, you will need it. And you know what else I found out, too, is that a lot of the books, I mean, here in the South, the books that they're using in school are very antiquated. I mean, very. And, you know, you can go to the internet now these days, and something that was in a school book even just 5 years ago, of course, their school books here are at least 20 years old. But anyway, even 5 years ago, you can look on the internet, and that has totally blown that concept to pieces, and they're onto something else. Now, herein lies a really big dilemma, is that you learn from very old books. Along comes the internet, and it blows all that to smithereens, and then you're taking these standardized tests that are based on what? Are they based on those old books? Are they based on common knowledge today? Are they built on this brand-new Nobel Prize winner that was, you know, like 2 years ago, or are they still basing it on Columbus sailed the ocean blue? I'm not kidding, you know?
And that's so true. It can be a huge dilemma. And what I teach students on that is you really have to be proactive to ask that your teacher, because some teachers are using the standardized test that may still go along with the textbook that's 20 years old.
Right.
Some might be creating their own tests, and some of them may be finding them from other places. So you really have to be proactive to say to the teacher or the instructors, you know, here's my, and just explain, that's my dilemma. Are you using just what's in this textbook, and that some of the information has changed and is not the same as what they have found out today because of the ever-changing world of technology? Or are we, you know, are you going to be writing up your own tests? Therefore, you're adding more new and more relevant information into your lectures and your handouts.
Mm-hmm.
And so students have to be really proactive question askers of the teachers and instructors. And so often the instructors is not giving away the test if they're just saying, you know, I'm using the exact textbook, you know, the tests that, you know, come along with this textbook.
Right.
So you really have to stick, when you're practicing for the test, stick with the knowledge given there. If there's something, you know, go back and recheck, and if you see something different in the notes, you know, you need to make a note of it and go with that. Or if they're writing their own tests or getting updated tests, they're very, most of the time they'll tell the student where those tests are coming from, just so that they can have the heads up that, yes, they're adding current information, or no, they're just, you know, we're using straight the textbook of what they have available.
And also, that is really meant to also empower students, because if you ask that in the beginning of the year and have it documented as such, you can really have something to stand on. Because if you're taking a test that she says she's going by the book, but then as the teacher is writing up her own test, She's already has this tape playing in her head of something that she knows that has already occurred, that she read on the internet or that she went to a seminar or that something new, and she may not realize that it, what is already in her mind as her concepts is not always equating to something that she has gotten across to you. So really there's a whole conundrum there of, you know, whose tape are we playing that we want to have spit out for A, B, or C?
Absolutely. And that comes again just from being a real, you know, proactive student who asks those questions. And if they do see some real inconsistencies, they can say, well, you know, you said you would only use this, but then you added this. And not be afraid to politely and graciously point it out in type of context and setting.
Because they don't want to bring it up is really when they're going to get stuck in it, because really the best student will come from one that's going to be able to say, no, hey, I read that paper too, but you just asked this question based on this study, so what are you asking me for? In other words, go up against it, because not everybody is perfect, you know, and to realize that everybody is just learning as we go along, and that's so important. How about this one, about not teaching cursive these days, and we really want to talk about writing? You don't even learn how to write anymore in school.
I know. I believe in my, I'm still old school enough, I do believe cursive has a very big place in
Not even old school. How are you going to sign your signature with an X?
That's just it. And, you know, I guess it's the parents will have to teach a signature of some sort. I'm not sure. But also, so many historical documents are written in cursive.
Yeah.
You know, most of our historical documents are in cursive writing, and therefore I still believe that students need to be able to read and write in cursive for their own benefit.
I don't even get how you're going to be able to write a letter or write your address on an envelope.
It has gotten
past the absurdity point on that one. Well, let's talk a little bit about your book. Your book has a lot of things here. You go by month, August, September, October, November, what to do and stuff. But, you know, I will caution people when they read the book. Your August, you must be talking about it August based upon a northern time frame, because here, down here, school starts on August 5th.
Right. Well, in Texas, it starts later in August. August 5th, my goodness, your early start.
Yeah, it's really
early. They'd have to jump right into September then.
Yeah. But you know what? I will say, you know, when it comes up to when you've gone through August and then everybody else is starting in September, really you're up till the middle of the semester already. And if you haven't learned something or gotten some good grades, man, it is super hard to pick up. I will always remember every single school year, we always struggled when it came to Thanksgiving time because we weren't caught up on our work. We weren't doing the grades that we needed to do. Even myself with college, it was like, where the heck did the time go? It's finals in a week. You know, finals are the first week of December. And it was like, I don't know where October went. Really, I only recognized, you know, 1 month, October. So it's really important that to realize that time goes very, very quickly. And I think the fall is the quickest semester to go by because of so many getting to know everybody, the social implications, and also all of the holidays.
Absolutely. And there's so many, you know, there's homecoming and all these other distractions, which are wonderful.
Yeah.
But students do need to continue to work on their, you know, making sure that they're staying up to speed and putting the work in that they need so that their grades are not slipping. Because all too often they can find themselves being so caught up in the fall with all the different activities, which are wonderful, and I think they all need to be a part of the school experience, but they can find themselves hyper-focusing on those and forgetting their grades, and then by, you know, it's time to Thanksgiving and everybody's in a panic.
Yeah.
And so I believe that students really need to have a organized homework and study time from the beginning of the school year, whenever that is, if it's beginning of August in your area or end of beginning of September up north, and that students need to really work every single day at, even if they don't have homework in class, in their classes, go ahead and get a head start, read the next chapter, do some pre-learning, read the vocabulary terms that they're going to be learning, pre-read some learning concepts so that they can help themselves become better students. And I found with those techniques, when my students applied those, techniques of really becoming more proactive students versus reactive students, where they were reading ahead, learning ahead, and when they heard new concepts in classes, in their class, they were able to absorb so much more from the lecture because they had some foundational knowledge already there. And it wasn't the first time they heard a new concept. They had already done some pre-research on that. And their grades, and these were kids who, you know, really had major struggles in school when they started with me, and their grades started to improve, and so did their self-esteem. And they felt better about themselves when they knew they were on track, you know, performing every day the tasks they need to perform, and that they weren't letting their grades slide or forgetting to turn in assignments, that they were staying up with the class. And therefore, there was actually less anxiety in the student as in their grades went up.
You know, and also the concept, too, about building on things. I know for myself, when I was in dental hygiene school, boy, I really struggled with these really thin, small books that we had on dental metals. And I look back on it today, and, you know, I got all the concepts that I needed. But, you know, doing the radio show, I can skim a book, you know, pretty much know their concept within maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, you know, usually, or if it's a bigger book, maybe an hour, hour and a half. So really, that's building on something. You know, I may have struggled with it in the past, but I got through it. And then now it's sort of like, it's just kind of like momentum behind the wheel.
It absolutely is. And I teach this also to my students is, you know, they would, you know, especially the high schoolers, and say, well, I've never done well in math, or I've never done well at science or whatever, or could be English, you know, and I'll never do well at it. And I would say, you know, that's the wrong attitude to have. Maybe you've struggled in the past, but over time, if you keep going back over and let's go back in and fill in the learning gaps that you probably have and some of the missed concepts that you thought weren't important or somehow just forgot or whatever, as we go back through and I reteach you some of these concepts and you keep working on those skills, you will get better. And you will find, just like you did with the reading, you end up with better skills than you ever thought you could have. And just because it's been hard in the past doesn't mean it always will be. Sometimes all that repetition can really pay off.
At this time, we're going to take a short break, as I'd like to share a product that I've been taking since December 2015, and I really feel the benefits every day. I'm sharing it because I really believe we need to start taking a few steps to improve our own health without waiting for someone to always tell us what to do. With heart and blood vessel complications these days, I really believe it's high on my list of what to take today. And so I hope you take a minute to check out the link following the Cardio Miracle information.
Attention all women over 50 who are feeling listless and tired. Are you constantly hitting a wall? Are your day-to-day activities wearing you out? We have great news. Take control of your health and empower your body with a new exclusive formula of vital nutrients and antioxidants. Our product, Cardio Miracle, is an alternative health option that can improve your general health and give you that much-needed natural energy so you can accomplish everything on your to-do list without feeling exhausted. Cardio Miracle can help you to have the energy and power you need to deal with all the lumps, bumps, and general chaos of life. It's called Cardio Miracle because it improves your heart health while giving you natural energy and important vitamins and nutrients your body craves. Statistics tell us women are at a high risk for a cardiac event. Please inform yourself as options are available. Discover more about this new product at cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette, spelled all in lowercase, DrJeanette. Thousands of women like yourself, including Dr. Jeanette, have blessed their bodies and their hearts with the restorative power of Cardio Miracle. Learn more at cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette. That's cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette.
Right. And also, to the idea that some words or some concepts, when you read a sentence when you're much older, all of that already comes forth, so you don't have to sit there and reread their you know, what they're trying to say. So it's kind of just comes forward. However, I will attest to this, and you can tell your students when they say that next time. You could say, yes, I took anatomy three times, once in the 70s, once in the 80s, and once in the 90s, and I still didn't do any better. So there's some things, because memorization was not on the high on my list, you know? And it's sort of like when I took zoology in the 70s, it was like, are you seriously kidding me? Why do I need to know all of this? It makes no sense to me. And I did horribly. But, you know, that's okay. I still can't tell you anything about zoology, but the third time at anatomy, I can.
Well, so,
it does take a while, but I think that's important to know that they're human when they have these fallings, you know? And say, let me tell you about this doctor. Here's what she said. Nice, so you could share that, okay?
I would be happy to, as long as you let me. I'm happy to share.
Oh, you're welcome.
All those stories are very motivating to students when they hear, oh, somebody struggled too, and they became a doctor. That gives me hope.
Oh, yeah, and I'll tell you, if you asked me to point out something, if you gave me a name and I would go, okay. But if you gave me a concept that went with it, I'd be okay. That's where this is. This is how this goes. That's how that goes.
Right.
So, you know, it's not always about just the words. So take your time.
It's not. And,
yeah.
And our minds think a little bit differently and have a little bit different skills.
Yeah, and that's such a difference, you know, too. Now, let's talk for a second about standardized tests. I think they're starting to go away from some of them in some colleges, aren't they?
Some of them are, but, you know, it's going to still take a little while till they're all gone and they're replaced entirely, you know, with new types of testing. But standardized testing for right now and today's student, they will still certainly encountering those tests in most colleges and universities that they attend. And one thing that I've really taught my students with standardized testing, first of all, they have to understand the reason behind it. And I found that when I would explain the reason is you have all these different curriculums and all these people coming together from different places, and maybe they haven't had the same knowledge and they want everybody to have the same knowledge, that makes more sense to them and they're less resistant. And then I also talk about whatever tests they're taking, when they're learning their material, they need to review in more than one way. My students did much better when I would review them where they had to tell me the answer and then use a small whiteboard to write part of the answer. Yeah. They didn't have to write the whole answer, just enough of it, but that double check really helped them. And one of the key ways that I found with my students, and I found this even for myself, where I would be studying the night before I'd go to bed, and then the next morning I'd have a test, and I would come to a question, and I would not remember that particular piece of information. And I knew it, but couldn't quite access it. And then I'd remember it 2 hours later after the test was over with, and I'd already missed the question. But what I taught my students to do is go back over their notes in the morning of the test, even if they reviewed the night before, because the brain will randomly file different information in all different kinds of places, and your memory you may or may not have gotten the information from the short-term to the long-term memory. Therefore, if they would just go back over their notes for a few minutes, they found themselves, and I found myself, being a much better test taker.
And you know what I also found, too, is I had to memorize so much stuff in all those 15 years, is that I would sometimes take maybe a phrase or a word that I would need to remember, and I would pick the first letter of it and make a word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what teaching skill that is, but at any rate, that's what I did. So I would have like maybe skin, and it might have been, you know, squamous cell keratosis, you know, in the upper necrotizing, whatever, something like that, you know.
Right.
And so that you would be able to have the components of it, which is, that's a huge thing that's taught in medical school, is how can you take these things apart, put it as a word, try and memorize it that way. So, you know, for kids to just understand that or be able to do that at a much younger age is so much easier.
Yeah, or even take Brent, and what I would have my students do is also like say that they were learning, you know, just for instance, photosynthesis, put it to a chant, the steps of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that they would, you know, like a little rap or a chant or something like that, or find words to be like trigger words. It really helped them so much. And sometimes even when I found with students with literature, when they were working on their literature books, it, you know, they could make a cartoon character out of some character they needed to remember. Any of those types of hooks and tools that worked for the student, I always encourage, because each one has their own hooks and tools that work for them. And what might work for one student, I found, didn't work for another. So I let them all kind of create their own way, whether it's taking a word or, you know, or making it, you know, taking another word to associate with it, or cartoon character, or some sort of, you know, even hand, some did hand signals for things that each signal, you know, if they had to learn a step of physics, you know, some mm-hmm. sort of physics formula, and each little hand signal, you know, signified some step. Whatever it took.
Right.
And I would really encourage them to do that.
And also, too, you could share this with your students, too, is that the concept that you will never know everything.
Right.
Because if you put that in your head and then you just say, I will know as much as I can. I can remember walking into a physics class in college, and I wondered why the class was so small and I got in it. There was only like 6 people in there. Well, anyway, we walked into the classroom, and starting at the left-hand backboard, there was a problem. It was 2 or 3 sentences. And then from there, all the way down that board, all the way across the front board, all the way across the right-hand board, were all these letters and symbols. Mm-hmm. And at the back right-hand side, there was a number. And he says, see that problem over there on the left? Top left, is the answer's over there on the bottom and the right. And I went, holy heck. I need to get out of this class. And then we come to figure it out that the teacher had just quit his job at the electron bombardment station in Texas. Well, of course, you know, and here he's teaching freshman physics. And I'm going, oh, this is not going to be good. And I'll tell you, it was not good. He helped me as much as he could, and he gave me a grade.
Sometimes that happens in everybody's learning career.
Right. But also, too, to say that there are those out there, and then know when to duck and run.
Absolutely.
You know, if it isn't working out, don't keep struggling through it. Say, you know, this isn't for me this semester. I'm going to take it next semester. Maybe there'll be a different teacher. Maybe I'll take it at a community college. Maybe I'll take it at a college next door. I've done that before. You know, my main curriculum will be in one school. And I said, oh, I can't handle this. And I bucked out. And they said, well, now you've bucked your curriculum to a year because you didn't have that prerequisite. And I said, fine. So I went to the summer classes at a community college, got it, and I was right back on track. So,
right, and that's those are always
remember
great.
That.
Absolutely, and I teach my students that as well. And especially if there's a class that they really struggle in, summer school
yeah.
might be the ideal time. And sometimes
yeah.
just a different instructor can really help.
Yes,
because
in a different environment.
Right, might just be so much better, and you might understand mm-hmm. under a different instructor. And not to always take it personally and just be proactive again and say, you know, this isn't working for me, it's okay. But I'm going to find another way to take it at a different time.
Yeah, because that guy had never taught physics before, and especially the freshman students, you know. So it was a learning curve to him, too, that he had to sit down and get me to understand something that was there.
Right.
And also, too, when you take a class in the summer, does not mean it's a negative. What it means is that you're not concentrating on 6 other subjects. You've just got that one to concentrate on. So,
right.
Hey, take
and that
it.
Is. That's how I've taught my students. So many often, you know, if you're just learning one class in isolation and this is an
mm-hmm.
area that you struggle in, you're better off when you're not trying to learn all these, you
right.
know, 7 other classes. You can really focus on just this particular class. And summer school is a marvelous tool for that.
And you can also take it in summer school prior to the year. So if you're having trouble
right.
in the school year and you duck out of it, you could take it after. But you could also take it prior
Absolutely.
To it at the same school. So it's really important to notice. Well, you know, Barbara, we have flown through this hour. I just now looked at the time. My goodness, we didn't even stop for a breath, right?
I guess not.
So if you could share for the listeners a little bit information on how to find out more about you, that would be great, in your book.
Absolutely. They can go to my website, which is www.dianiseducation.com, and that's spelled D-I-A-N-I-S. And the book is available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com, both of them. And it's called Grade Transformer for the Modern Student. And it takes the student for every single month. It takes a month to month through the school year, because I found so many, with working with many different school systems, I found so much similarity on, and the types of studying that they need to do in the fall can be very different from what March looks right. like. And so I found myself always building and changing each month and helping the students change themselves and some of their ways that they're going about learning each month, and that's why I wrote it that way. And then they can also go to my Twitter, which is dianased.com, and I have many articles that I've published all over on that. And they can go to my Facebook page, which also has quite a few of my articles on that as well.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I really think this will be a great topic for a lot of holiday conversation. Isn't the holidays the worst time to get grades?
It really is, but it's a good time if they haven't gotten their grades yet to spend a few hours here and there to get caught up.
Yeah, it's tough. I'll remember. Yeah. I always remember getting my grades just before Christmas, and it may went for one heck of a holiday. It was not always pleasant.
Like I teach my students, well, it's time to strategize what needs to be done in January right after the holiday, so improvements can be made.
That's right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about Barbara Dianis, her book is Grade Transformer for the Modern Student. We talked today about the upper high school edition. The link is on the bottom of today's show page, where you'll go directly to her website. And please do check it out. I'll tell you, as I've really shared my whole story, I think it's important to share your story too as parents. Okay, so your kids might be struggling. You just don't know. Okay, so thank you so much, and have a wonderful day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit www.drjeanettewellness.com to schedule a phone appointment today with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.